Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to this edition of Locked On Grizzlies Talking Summer League with our friend Keith Parrish from the Fast Break Breakfast Pod. We'll do that here in just a moment. Keith was out there, and I want to hear what Keith has to say about his time in person. He saw a lot of neat stuff, saw a lot of interesting people, saw a lot of basketball, probably most of it bad. But hey, we'll talk about the good and the bad with Keith, maybe a little bit of the ugly too. But first, I want to talk about my friends at Outdoors, Inc. Love the great people at Outdoors, Inc. And I want to say a big thank you to Michael and the whole staff over at Outdoors, Inc. for their continued support of Locked On Grizzlies. And if you like the podcast, please support them too. And they're really helping you. What they say, and it's really true, they outfit human-powered recreation. They've been doing it since 1974. And what is human-powered recreation? Well, it's what you like to do. It's fun stuff. It's outdoors. You like to go outside. And heck, if you just like to walk around, as I did on the beach a few weeks ago, you like to just kind of take a little leisurely walk. They've got incredible footwear. If you have much more of a adventurous spirit, though, and you like to go rock climbing, you like to go biking, you like to go kayaking, you like to get in and amongst it, then they've got great stuff for you. But their footwear is absolutely superb. Birkenstocks, Tevas, Keens, all of these and more they've got for you. And I love the Birks. Been wearing Birks for forever. They've been making them since 1774. They've been making high-quality, premium footwear. Birkenstock, one of the great names that you can get at Outdoors, Inc. Whatever you are looking for, they've got for you. If you want coolers, because, man, it is hot, they have got you covered. Yetis and beyond. And listen, great prices, but really more importantly, what they do for you, they've got great people that can consult, can help you with all of the questions that you have, whether you're looking for a bike, kayak, rock climbing gear, whatever it may be. They got you covered, hiking stuff. It's all there. It's all there for you, and it's really, really convenient with 5 locations in the Memphis area, Jackson as well. And for anybody, whether you're in Memphis or not, online at OutdoorsInc.com. Remember, use that promo code LOGRIZZLIES to save 10% off your entire cart. That's promo code LOGRIZZLIES. It saves 10% off your entire cart at Outdoors, Inc. Love the great folks at Outdoors, Inc. And for you, if you're out in the summer right now, go see them because I promise you, they've got something that you need and, more importantly, something that you just want. Go see them over at Outdoors, Inc. Well, as promised, joining me now to talk about Summer League and about his experience there, because he was in Vegas on site doing his thing, is our friend Keith Parrish from the Fast Break Breakfast Pod. You can follow them at Fast Break Break on the old Twitter, and always quality stuff. Their pod is tremendous. I have appeared a couple times and always enjoy myself. And so I appreciate Keith doing me a solid and giving me his impressions from over in Vegas and what he thinks of the Grizz Summer League experience. First of all, Keith, how were things in Vegas? Is this your first go-around at Summer League?
No, this is my at least fourth year in a row.
At least fourth in a row.
I can't remember if it's 5 or 4, honestly. My wife would know if you asked her. She has a very clear tally.
Go ask her. If you could just go give her a call real fast, and we'll come back. We'll wait for you and just figure out and let me know.
Yeah. I'm going to say 5.
Okay. Let's go with 5.
Okay.
I mean, I can't correct you. So, whatever you say, you could say, 15 and I'd have to go with it.
It all runs together, days run into nights. It's all very, very hot. There was one year the high was only 90, and that was amazing.
That is amazing.
This year was once again, 115 during the day.
It's kinda a dry rough heat, Keith.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Dry heat. Not bad.
It's when it's going off that pavement is really fun. That's the dry heat that I like. It's why, if you're ever walking around, in downtown anywhere, especially a bigger city New York or something like that, where any place where there's large buildings and no wind can really get through, And you just walk. It doesn't. I don't care how hot it is. It's plus 20 when you're walking around, at least. And I'm sure Vegas is very similar. My only trips to Vegas have actually been off season, so I tend to avoid Vegas in the summer for that reason.
The good part is I spend all of the day inside either a casino or a basketball gym, that makes it tolerable.
So speaking of casino, what do you play?
Gaming wise, I like, you know, blackjack and roulette. I actually didn't do much actual table gaming this year. I did a little bit of blackjack with some random other basketball writer friends, and it turned out all right. I actually gambled a lot. Since I was uncredentialed media for this experience, I had no qualms on placing daily wagers on the actual basketball games. I mean, I probably could have as a credentialed media member, but anyway, I was not credentialed. I gambled on lots and lots of summer league basketball games.
Yeah, I can say that there certainly are a lot of credentialed media members who have gambled. You know, I'm not gonna bust anybody out there, but that's not uncommon. Now that being said, did you end up, down? Did you bet all the way with the Grizzlies? Where did you go?
I ended up slightly. I think I ended up like $30.
Okay.
And mainly because I placed a couple of large wagers on the Grizzlies that where I had to sweat them out incredibly. I gambled big on their first game against the Wizards because the Wizards had no real NBA talent. And I'm looking at the Grizzlies roster, like, we have 7 or 8 actual rotation or guys who have been in the NBA. This should be an easy win. And it was not an easy win. Wayne Selden bailed the team out and myself out with that and one jumper with 2 seconds left, and saved me with the cover. And then the Jazz overtime game where I think I had Grizzlies plus 2.5. And it wasn't until Jarrell Martin, like, I needed the overtime. A regulation win wasn't going to cover. So they got to overtime, and then Jarrell Martin iced the game with a half-point cover. And so those two larger bets kind of covered me losing other games and the blackjack.
I feel like, and I don't mean to offend when I say this, Keith, but I feel like betting Summer League is a cry for help. I feel like that's when you have bet Summer League, and maybe if you bet, you know, you're out there, so I should just amend it to, if you're not on site and you bet Summer League, it's a cry for help.
That's what I'm saying. I was telling another basketball writer, a friend, Jeff Siegel, who just looked at me straight in the eyes and was like, Keith, you shouldn't bet Summer League games. And I'm like, no, this is purely entertainment. I'm not betting my mortgage check. I'm not betting my kids' food money. Like, this is purely entertainment. I'm just having a good time. It helps you focus. Those Summer League games, they get long. So, you know, it kept my attention. It kept me wrapped.
they do. And you're right. Summer League, even if you are a hardcore fan, it's much more about being there and just kind of like, from your sake, I'm sure, just walking around and seeing people. Who'd you meet? Who'd you talk to? What'd you see? I know you were on watch with Fizz and Larry Brown, keeping an eye on their unlikely friendship. What did you see?
Well, that's one of the cool things, if you've never been to Summer League, is all the NBA writers, all the NBA front office, all the coaches, the players, they're just walking around everywhere. And as you said, my experience, which I put on Twitter, was I'm just sitting there watching one of the first Grizzlies games, and David Fizdale and Larry Brown, Hall of Fame coach, sit down right in front of me. And I'm like, oh, are these guys buddies? You know, I didn't know they were buddies. And then apparently on the broadcast, they eventually said that maybe Larry Brown's going to have some sort of consulting role. I met in person a couple of Grizzlies standby media people. Like, I'd never met Alexis Morgan before in person. I actually never met Chris Vernon in person, so I got to say hi to them. And then I just met a bunch of other, like, fellow podcasters, writers, a lot of Lakers people who I've actually met some of them the year before, a lot of Trailblazers people. So that's the fun part. It's the fun part connecting with a lot of Twitter people you communicate with throughout the season, but maybe have never met in person. So just tons and tons of those people.
Yeah, those Grizzly folks. I bet they were real jerks to you, right?
They were all right. You know, they were. Oh, okay, you're that guy. Like, give us room. You know.
I hope they were very nice. They're both lovely people. I like Alexis and Chris a lot. So I'm glad that you got a chance to say hello in a more casual setting over in Vegas. So let's talk about like what actually happened on the floor as you guys have been and have been tweeting about and talking about yourselves and a lot of fans. You know, it's hard, Keith, to like figure out what to do with Summer League. And you've been there now enough times. You've seen some of the brightest stars shining so brightly in Summer League. And that shine means jack squat in actual basketball terms when it comes to the NBA. So with your experience having seen that, what do you do with the information that you've learned here in Summer League?
Well, a lot of people throw out Summer League and you always see excuses. Someone has a really big game. Lonzo Ball goes off and they're like, it's just Summer League. Or then someone really struggles and you say, it's just Summer League. That's true to a point. The way I look at it is being good in Summer League means very little, but being bad in Summer League actually means something typically. Like being bad in Summer League is a bad sign. Like you can't excuse everything. Yes, there are examples of people who were terrible in Summer League and turned out really good, but it's one of those things where like if you can't do it in Summer League, that's kind of a bad sign. It can be a bad sign. So like you don't get too elevated with really positive performances. But I do think there is some value in looking at guys who struggle and say, uh-oh, like I'm not sure Tyler Lydon for the Denver Nuggets is going to be very good. Like that's a first round draft pick who doesn't look like he belongs on the basketball court. So that's kind of how I take it. Like bad reads more than good does.
So basically it's all downside and not really upside.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are guys who obviously dominate, and you're like, you know, that could translate. Like that could be good. This guy, because you do want to see second-year guys, and Wayne Selden falls into this, who guys who have played some in the NBA, who they should pop when you see them their next summer league. They should be like, I have the confidence, I have the ability, I am better than these guys I'm going up against. And so you can take a positive impression from that to say, okay, this guy might be all right. This guy could be a rotation NBA player. But yeah, it is. And again, if my listeners of Fast Break Breakfast know, I do enjoy the bad side. I like pointing out the flaws and the failures. So yeah, some of that with Summer League, I do take it to be gospel. Like, well, that guy's bad.
You're hate watching Summer League, like MST3K style? Is that what we're getting at here?
Not as far that way. I mean, I do honestly, I adore Summer League. I think it's so fun. I see lots of people tweeting about like, oh man, 4 days in Vegas is way too much. I can't watch all this terrible basketball. I adore Summer League. I think watching the young guys play, watching these guys fight for just camp invites, I find it much more riveting than, say, I don't know, like the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Well, the quality is very similar. So that works out well. I think there's a market for that now that I think about it. Saying it out loud. I think if you had a replay or you had some kind of a thing where you could watch old games and do it MST3K style and like have people, you know, like yourself or others that want to be smart asses about it. I think there's a market for that. Like you know, NBA TV, like even goofing on like old promos and stuff like that. I think there's something there.
Yeah, we've actually done similar things with our podcast. We used to work with a company called Rabble.tv. They've pivoted, but it was the same thing. And some people do that with the Periscope, where you can do a side screen.
Well, so yeah. But I would like it to be sort of superimposed. You know, I mean, like I want the full experience. I don't want a side screen. I want the whole deal. We'll have our planning meeting later on, Keith.
That's good. We might fold that into our Fast Break Breakfast Patreon. That could be something for our Patreon subscribers.
Okay, you get in touch with me. We'll make this thing work. We'll do a little cross promo on this. This deal. So you mentioned the guy. I mean, I think unequivocally from Summer League, the Grizzlies' success is Wayne Selden. I don't think there's anybody that can question what he did. As you said, and it's a term I like, he popped. He just looks like a guy that is a rotation NBA player, which in Summer League means you are a superstar. And, you know, averaged 23 points on 45% shooting. Shot 33% from three, which is not great, but not horrendous. Got to the foul line a ton. Was very active, and I think more importantly, just looked very confident in his ability to be the man on this team. I don't know what that means for him, because he's certainly not going to be the man on the real team, but for a guy who was undrafted, who typically was out there playing with a bunch of first and second round picks, that means something, Keith.
I agree. I think it's a sign of encouragement for the Grizzlies that they actually hit on one of their undrafted guys. Like, we can lament Grizzlies draft picks for, you know, ages, but the fact that you do find an undrafted guy who looks like he can be a contributor. I loved the fact that he seemed to take over the team from like the first minute of the first game. You're like, oh, this is our guy. And it didn't let up. He had that confidence. He had that leadership the whole time. The 3-point shooting, you know, like, he only shot 33%, but my impression with just watching the games, and I don't have like actual, you know, synergy numbers or anything backing it up, it felt like he took a lot of those shots off the dribble. Like, they were difficult shots. And the fact that he seemingly could create that 3-point shot off the dribble and it looked comfortable. It didn't always go in. It wasn't a great percentage, but the Grizzlies don't have anyone who can pretty much shoot a three off the dribble outside of Mike Conley. So if he can keep progressing his shooting stroke, you know, I thought that was really encouraging. Just the fact that it seemed like an easy, natural jump shot. It didn't seem like it was too far for him, or he was heaving those shots. So, yeah, I came away very encouraged with Grizzlies starting shooting guard Wayne Selden.
Well, and that leads me to my next question, because, you know, before I get into that debate, I have to ask you, how did you feel about the Ben McLemore signing?
Not great. I understand how you can talk yourself into it. I think the most positive way as a Grizzlies fan you can look at the offseason is wrapping that and the Tyreke Evans deal together and pretending like, all right, with our mid-level exception, we got Ben McLemore and Tyreke Evans. Cool. Like, you can somewhat talk yourself into that being a good result, even though I think Tyreke Evans, it was the biennial exception or whatever, right. biannual, excuse me.
Right.
But the McLemore signing is kind of rough, because, you know, you paid over $5 million a year for him, especially when you look at Jonathan Simmons only getting $6 million, and you can say what you want about how Jonathan Simmons is going to translate outside of San Antonio, but him just getting $6 million, a guy still floating out there, Ian Clark, I think it's very possible he signs somewhere for just the biannual exception, or either that the room exception, like the $4 million thing, and that seems like a cheaper option. It's so the McLemore thing, I don't know. Like, Wayne Selden looks way better than Ben McLemore.
Yeah.
Has
well,
ever looked?
That's, you know, what you bring up is my discussion of this. And I'm going to fold this in, because I was going to do a separate pod on it, but I probably just we'll talk about it here for a little bit. This is why you don't run out and sign Ben McLemore on day three of free agency for that much money. People will talk about, it's not like it's life-changing money. It's not franchise-destroying money. It's not like you're paying him, you know, $15 million a year or something stupid. But it's enough money that it totally changes the rest of your trajectory in free agency. It changes the way you have to approach it. It takes away a roster spot. It puts you out of the running for stuff like this that happened with Jonathan Simmons, when the Spurs just had decided, you know, after trying a couple different approaches in free agency, they just said, look, we're just not going to sign it. You know, they didn't even make him an offer. It's very much like Zach Randolph, where they just kind of said, look, we're going to go in a different direction. You know, you could say whether that might be a red flag for Simmons, but I know I would rather have Simmons at $6 million, and not even fully guaranteed in that third year, by the way, than Ben McLemore at $5 million. And whatever, fully guaranteed for his 2 years. I'd rather have Thabo Sefolosha for this Grizzlies team, considering they're going to try to actually win, than Ben McLemore, and they signed the exact same contract. This was another example of, you know, Chris Wallace mistiming the market and reaching for a guy that, frankly, there's really very little justification, unless you think that all of his problems are strictly because of Sacramento and that there is a legit serious amount of improvement that he can make. Unless that's the case, and there's a lot of pressure now to prove that based on these other signings, you know, to me, Keith, that's why you don't do that, and that's why it deserves a lot more criticism. You could fold it into Tyreke if you want, but to me, that signing alone really was problematic for the Grizzlies.
It's like you have, I'm trying to think of the analogy. Maybe you're giving your kid, like, you have a $5 allowance to buy anything you want. So the Grizzlies had one opportunity, and that's the mid-level exception pretty much, to improve their roster. And as you said, this is a team that is ostensibly trying to win,
right,
with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley.
Right.
And so with their entire way they can improve their team, they're like, I would like to take a flyer on Ben McLemore. Like, I think hoping Ben McLemore turns out good. So it's the kid, like, you have $5, and he's like, you know what? I just want I want an overpriced bag of gum. And you're like, that's what you want to spend your $5 on? You don't get any more $5. Like this is it. Or like a fancy balloon at Kroger. You're like, that's not gonna. Although honestly, my 2.5-year-old loves a fancy balloon. I don't think there's anything.
Well, I'm going to say this analogy hits close to home because, frankly, my son has a $5 allowance and he likes to spend it on dumb stuff. And I spend most of my time trying to, like, explain to him that you really don't want this. This is really not what you want. You actually want something else. And, you know, he doesn't listen. And so, yes, I get that. I think it's more, you know, it's also like if you're out there on the market and you're trying to, you know, buy a car and you've got a certain budget and, you know, you're going to spend 10 grand on your car or whatever. And somebody comes along with, you know, this, like, nice little pre-owned, you know, 2003, whatever, and you think, oh, I can fix this baby up, and this is going to be good. Yeah, it's worth my full 10 grand. And then, you know, you wait a week, and, you know, somebody comes along with a really, really nice, well-maintained, excellent car that fits right in that price range, and you've already spent it. I mean, why did you feel the need? Why did you have to go out and blow it? So, I mean, again, it's entirely possible that this thing works out. I think it puts too much pressure on McLemore. I think it puts too much pressure on the Grizzlies now. And if you're trying to win, you don't need to try to bring this guy along. The Grizzlies' track record, you know, with developing talent isn't exactly great.
Yeah, I agree. I love the car. I think the car analogy is a better analogy. It's saying, hey, there's all these great used Honda Civics, which have been to the playoffs many, many times available. But I'm going to try like a tricked out old Jeep with like running lights and stuff. And you're like, yeah, but that'll look cool. And that might, like, that has the body of something good.
Yeah, I'm going to take these running lights off and I'm going to take this out. We're going to change this thing up a little bit. We're going to tune it up a little bit. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you need to try to do that? Why?
And this will be my commuter car.
Right. I'm going to get this Hummer. This is going to be great. Why?
Yeah.
I get the Tyreek thing. I'm fine with, no problem. I think that's good. It's hard to be upset with a signing like that, but I do think that's going to be problematic. And here's the other thing, Keith. So continuing with Summer League, Wayne Selden, unqualified success, thumbs up, nice job. You get an A, well done, you know, Wayne. But does anyone else even really get a B+? I mean, what's the highest next grade for a Grizzly?
No, no one gets a B+. That's a great question. The highest next grade, I think you'd have to go with Dylan Brooks, who proved he is he's a basketball player. Like, he, you know, he's not. And I don't actually, I don't mean that disparaging to him. I mean that, like, disparaging, like, we keep drafting, you know, McDonald's All-Americans,
right,
guys with measurables. It's like, oh, but Dylan Brooks, this guy's actually like a basketball player. Like, he has the feel for the game. You know, he can defend. He can pass a little bit. He can shoot a little bit. I don't know if he's an NBA basketball player. I don't know if he can contribute on the NBA level. But at the very least, he has a feel for the game. The rest of the guys, while their measurables are better and they have a more defined or easier path to getting some minutes in the NBA, I don't think you could give them a B+. I think it's all, they're still giant question marks. And that highlights the Ben McLemore question mark as well, because now we're looking at a 15-man possible roster where you don't know if five of the guys can play NBA basketball.
Yeah,
and this is
and that's what that, and I'm, and I want to cut you off there, cuz I want to get to each one of these individually. The one that's the most concerning to me, I guess there's kind of a tie for the most concerning with Wade Baldwin and Deonte Davis. So let me start with Deonte. I didn't think, and Keith, you were there in person, so you can help me with this, but to me, he looks too big. He looked like they bulked him up maybe going for like a strength training situation or something, and it just it's too far on the other end. He looks slug. It's either that or he's just out of shape. One of the two, and I hope it's the former rather than the latter, because he looked throughout the entire, apart from a couple exceptions here and there, he looked slow. He looked disinterested. He had a couple of good post moves, but by and large, he wasn't really impactful on the offensive end. Didn't really impact rebounding the ball. Was okay defensively, as much as you can be in summer league. But I mean, I for a guy that needs to be like a big time player for this organization, I thought it was a fairly alarming performance.
I think it was alarming because you want those second year guys to do a little more. And yes, summer league isn't a great showcase for a defensive first big, you know, who isn't right. really going to do much on the offensive end. But it was still concerning. Yes, I agree. I don't know if he was too big, but yes, sluggish. He looked slow. On offense, he seemed very hesitant to post up. Like, they were running plays for him, and like the look was supposed to go to Deontay, and he couldn't get in front of his guy. Like, guards would just push him out of the way. He's going up against a bunch of other undrafted bigs or other second round bigs, and he never looked like he was the best big guy on the court.
No.
Which I think is very concerning. The things that we saw in the regular season for him were way more promising, where it seemed like, okay, this guy jumps, this guy's blocking shots. And then his personality-wise, like, he seems like he's a quiet guy. He's kind of shy. And so I heard Coach Ciprian talking, saying, like, that they'd encourage him to go and block everything, and that he, Deonte Davis, was apologizing for missed plays. But as a Grizzlies fan, no, I wasn't incredibly concerned, because when I'm doing my own personal depth chart, I have him penciled in. Like, all right, Deonte Davis, he's going to be our backup big. Like, are we going to move Brandon Wright? You know, maybe. So Deonte Davis, like, backup big. And it's like, oh, like, yeah, he got pretty much outworked by every other big man. Well, the Portland Trailblazers lost. You know, they went double bigs with Jarnell Stokes and Caleb Swanigan, and the Grizzlies
killed him. Killed
yeah, couldn't handle it.
I mean, Jarnell Stokes, as we know, I've talked to all these guys. You know, Deonte is a quiet dude, very, very quiet. Jarnell is a huge, huge man. If you've seen him, I mean, I've sat there and talked to him, and he is enormous. Like, the guy is physically, like, he looks like a wrestler. Yeah, he looks like he will crush your skull. So that's a tough physical challenge, but he doesn't need to be going 22-15 on you. You know, you don't need a double-double with him and Caleb Swanigan, and, you know, picking up fouls left and right and just being unable to physically deal with these guys. You know, we know what Jarnell Stokes is in the NBA, and it's a fringe player, period. And I'm, you know, it's not a, like I said, it's not a perfect comparison, but that was another alarming performance for me. Then you go to Wade Baldwin. And again, I loved the pick, Keith. I really did. And he's from your neck of the woods. You know, played in Vandy, and so you saw a lot of Wade in college. Guy could shoot. Was 42% 3-point shooter in college. Has tremendous measurables, length, all that stuff, athleticism. But it just the feel for the game continues to, if anything, get worse. You would have thought that based on the performances we've seen from this guy, everyone would know, in him especially, what he needs to work on. You know, don't drive to the basket with your head down. Have a plan in place about what you're going to do. Develop something else other than that little, you know, nifty finish at the rim. You know, develop something of a mid-range game. Get that shot working a little bit more. And it just, other than little fits and starts here and there, it just didn't happen, Keith. And you can't pencil him in as... He's not even the third guard to me, because I think Andrew Harrison is still ahead of him based on this performance.
Okay, so a couple of things. I'm not a scout, but I joke, like, with summer league, I like to make snap decisions. I always say, like I like to watch a first round pick play for, you know, like 2 minutes, and then I'm like, nope or yep. So actually, you know, Wade played at Vanderbilt. I actually never saw him play a basketball game at Vanderbilt. I'm embarrassed to say, but last year at summer league, when I saw Wade Baldwin go out on the court, I was like, oh no, like this guy does not look like he's ever played basketball to me. He doesn't know what's going on. However, I will say this summer league, I think I was more encouraged than other people were about Wade Baldwin, especially people I see on Twitter. Everyone's like, oh man, this guy's not going to do it. So I actually was kind of encouraged by what I saw from Wade this summer league in a couple of areas. One, yeah, he doesn't have good feel for basketball, but he looked comfortable scoring in that mid-range from 10 to 12, 14 feet off the dribble. Like, not like he's going to kill you all the time, but everyone was sagging off of him, and he made a lot of like elbow jumpers, and he couldn't do that at all last year. So I'm like, oh, he's improving at that. That's good. His handle looked a little better. He still makes turnovers because he doesn't know what he's doing when he drives. But when he's controlling the ball himself, like he had a crossover that was really low to the ground, like that, you know, no one's going to take it away from him. So I was encouraged by that. His catch and shoot three pointers looked a lot better. He made several of them. He still can't hit a three off the bounce at all, like, you know, pulling up in transition. Like, he's not going to hit that. So I was somewhat encouraged because, again, he's really young, that he is improving and he looks significantly better than anything I saw in the regular season outside of the opening night, great stat line, and last year's summer league, which was a complete disaster. So all that to say, I don't think he's contributing much this coming season either. Again, I had penciled in Deonte Davis, backup center, Wade Baldwin, backup point, you know, sometime at two. It's like, no, I think Andrew Harrison is still probably going to play over him. But I am not completely pulling my hair out about Wade Baldwin now because, again, he's still, I think he's 21, and the fact that I saw improvement. So take that for what you will. I'm not as discouraged as I was, but he's still not going to be much of a contributor this season, I don't think.
See, I like your optimism from a guy that's normally pessimistic, so I like that. That's good. I would say I wouldn't even call it a rebuttal because I think you make good points, and I don't disagree with you that he was better. My issue with it is that the scale that we're working with here, you know, we're talking about a guy that was, in terms of the Grizzlies' value pick, you know, where they got this guy, he's, you know, one of their most important players in some time. And you talk about his improvement in the way that you would talk about, like, Yogi Ferrell, you know, or Bryn Forbes, or, you know, and those guys were both better, really, you know, both last year and in summer league.
Oh, by a tremendous margin.
Than Wade Baldwin, and Wade Baldwin is a crucial pick. You know, not to say that the, you know, pick doesn't determine everything, but it's important for you to get it right. And it's almost damning with faint praise in the way that you discuss Wade Baldwin, which kind of highlights my alarm about the situation, because you need that guy. You cannot keep counting on finding undrafted diamonds in the rough. You know, you have to, as an organization, start finding just the diamonds that are sitting out in the field and just go pick them up, and don't pick up the dog crap that's next to the diamond. Go pick up the actual diamond, like a lot of teams seem to be able to do. And that's my alarm with Wade. I think he was better, but again, I expected a lot more, because I expect more from a second year mid first round pick than, like, oh, I think he might be able to kind of slide into that third guard role. Your third point guard, maybe. What do you think? I think you got to get more than that.
Yeah, I mean, you highlighted that it is Wade was an incredibly important draft pick in the Grizzlies' timeline as a franchise. Like, this is one of the higher picks they're going to have.
Yeah.
And this was, we have a giant hole at backup point guard, and we need some help to fill in behind Tony Allen. Because the previous really, really big draft pick in the Grizzlies' timeline was Jordan Adams, who was supposed to take over from Tony Allen. So that was an abject failure. And so this one, yeah, it is damning with faint praise. But I think it's because I was so out on Wade Baldwin last year, where this guy might not be an NBA player, where now I'm like, you know what? I can see where this guy could be an NBA player. When you compare him to other second-round guards who were at Summer League themselves or played last year, like a la Malcolm Brogdon, and then you said Bryn Forbes, a Yogi Ferrell who was undrafted, who looks much more confident And there's a bunch of other, like Mike James, who the Suns have on a two-way contract, who was just destroying Summer League. Yeah, that's discouraging. But I already shed my tears for that last year.
There you go. Okay,
so now I'm like, all right, now looking forward, yes, I could see Wade being a player at some point.
So that's I hope that's the case, because, yeah, they do need him. They need him to be good. They need him to come together. He's an important part of that whole thing. Now, Keith, what of Jarrell Martin? Does he do anything as an NBA player? Is there anything that you saw that gives you any thought that there is any redeemable situation with Jarrell? He goes out on the game on Sunday with 6 fouls in 16 minutes. And he had one, I think, pretty good performance and a lot of not good. What of Jarrell Martin?
I think I like Jarrell a little more than other people. To answer the question, is there an NBA role for him? You know, I don't think so. But as a 12th or 13th man, you could also maybe do worse. So, like, I'm not too discouraged. Again, well, I'm discouraged when you look at the Grizzlies as a whole.
I want to make it clear what just happened here, okay?
Yeah.
You said I'm higher on him than most.
Yes.
Then you proceeded to say I don't think he's an NBA player, and as a 12th or 13th man, you could do worse.
No.
You're higher on him than most. Let's remember that.
I think he's a perfectly functional 13th man for maybe one more year. And so that might put me higher on him than most of, say, Grizzlies Twitter. His decision-making is his big thing. And it was a spotlight was on that at Summer League. Some really bad plays. It seems like his go-to move is a pull-up 20-footer off the jumper. I mean, off the dribble, which isn't great. But he does. You know, he's 6'9". He has a decent handle for someone that size. And he's a mid-range shooter, which is an incredibly not valued asset in today's NBA. So
there's that.
You know, so there's that.
He does something that no one really wants, and he does a lot of other stuff that people wish he could do, and he can't really do that stuff. But he does other stuff that you don't want him to do, and he has a very low basketball IQ, as far as I can tell. And he's a nice guy. I wish him well, but I just cannot for the life of me see any role for him from here on out other than as throw in trade, you know, find a place to put him.
I don't think you're going to, you know, I could see them waiving him just to open up a roster spot and just eating his guaranteed salary. But I could see a role for him right now as the Grizzlies are currently constructed because there is no power forward and someone has to play minutes. And if it's between him and Ivan Rabb or Deonte Davis, someone's got to play some minutes. Now, I'm hoping Jermichael Green.
I mean, I would assume Jermichael Green will take those. Will take the bulk of those minutes, and then you'll have Deonte and who knows how maybe Chandler Parsons, maybe I don't know. We could talk about Jermichael here in a little bit. What about Rade? Because Rade, you could have potentially thrown in there as maybe he would play a little bit of four in a stretchy kind of way, and maybe he still can. Bear in mind that Roddy hasn't really played competitive basketball in about 5 months going into this summer league, and he obviously hasn't played at even this level of competition in terms of some of the people that he played against. Not everybody. I mean, he played his league is a good league, and he played against some good players. So I'm not knocking Megalex or, you know, his league at all. I'm just – they didn't consistently see most of this talent level. Those exceptions aside, he looked super slow. I mean, glacial at times. And to me, Keith, he just looked a little scared. Like he didn't really know what to do. He didn't really want to get into the hustle and bustle of a lot of these games. And maybe that was just, you know, his tentative nature, and, you know, he's a little bit rusty. That could be. By no means am I ruling anything out. But I kind of was hoping to see a little more from Roddy, and just didn't see much to get real jazzed about, and to think that he's really going to play a big role this year.
Again, I mean, I'm a broken record no, I don't think he's going to contribute at all this year, you know, on the court. I wasn't as concerned about like the speed of him himself, and I do think he was intimidated on the Memphis Grizzlies Ask Rade portion of Twitter. Right. I asked who's the best player you played against at Megalex, and he said Sasha Pavlovich. So, you know, he hasn't played against the caliber of competition that he's even going to see at NBA Summer League, let alone in the actual league. So, again, this
and
is...
I didn't appreciate, by the way, Keith, that I asked my Ask Roddy question about say your name, and he just typed Roddy.
I thought that was hilarious.
Come on, Roddy. You're killing me. I need to know. I got to broadcast this. I think it's Roddy Zagaratz, but I would like to hear him say it so we can know for sure.
What, are you wanting him to post an audio file?
Yes, I want. They're sitting right there. You saw the people there. You saw the Grizzlies digital people. All I need him to do, they have a camera right there. Just post him saying his name. Done. Bing, bing, bing.
I assume he did that as a joke, but I don't know that. If he did it as a joke, I thought it was hilarious.
I know he did. I know he did. I'm just giving him a hard time.
You'll get the media guide with the phonetic pronunciation at some point.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I'm counting down the days for my phonetic pronunciation guide to come in.
No, so Rade, yeah, like he's slow. He's young. He hasn't played at this level. His first game I thought was pretty bad, where it looked like he wasn't even looking up. When he dribbled, like there was an opportunity for him to throw an alley-oop on a fast break, and I feel like he didn't even look up to throw it. But I do feel like he settled in, and by the end of it, he was moving where he was supposed to move. He was shooting when he was supposed to shoot. His shot looks functional, like he doesn't look broken.
Yeah.
So, again, like 2019, 2020 Grizzlies, he might contribute along with third guard Wade Baldwin.
There you go. I think, you know, and that's what I do think there's a player – you know, there, having watched him a fair bit for Megalex and talking to some folks that scouted him for a while. And, you know, I think there you can't go too much with Summer League on him because there's just not enough tape and there's just not enough of a transitional time and all that. So we'll see if he can actually contribute. But this highlights kind of the reason I bring all this stuff up, and, you know, it would have been nice to see Ivan Rabb, but, you know, shockingly enough, the Grizzlies have drafted a guy with some ankle and foot issues and injury problems. It's weird, I know, but it has happened. So it'd be nice to have seen him, but these guys are going to have to perform. You know, these guys are going to have to contribute. And that's – so I don't want to sound – and I feel like I'm sounding kind of harsh. I don't really mean to be harsh. It's just that this was one of the more experienced summer league teams, by and large, that was out there, and more importantly, a lot of these guys are going to have to fill in some of those spots that will be left by Zach and Tony and Vince, and they got to play. And so if these performances are any indication, that transition is going to be rough to get them up to speed to be rotation guys, and the Grizzlies. In a super competitive West, you don't have that kind of time for training wheels.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like I'm very overall down on the Grizzlies as a franchise right now, because you put out an experienced summer league team that looked fine, but outside of Wayne Selden, who again, looking at your depth chart, is he our sixth best player? Like that's not good. Yeah. And then the rest of it is this. There's six guys, including or seven guys, like including Chandler Parsons, if you want, and Ben McLemore. You don't know if they can contribute on the basketball court to a winning team, like to a playoff team. And I look at the Grizzlies roster over the years, where we keep adding on like a JV squad, which I've said on my own podcast a couple of times, of guys who aren't really going to play in an important, meaningful NBA game. And like you look at 4 years ago or 3 years ago, where the 11th and 12th guys were, I don't know, like Beno Udra and John Luer or Quincy Pondexter. Like those were legit NBA players. Like we had 10 good NBA players. I say we as the Grizzlies, you know, had 10 NBA players ahead of them.
Mo Spates and Ellington.
Yeah, guys that, incredibly deep rosters. And then we just keep adding on like – I guess they're bites at the apple, hoping one turns out to be good. But for Mike and Mark being in their primes or being at the end of their primes and the Grizzlies going for the playoffs in an incredibly difficult Western Conference, I don't think you can have this many just, well, I don't know if he's good or not. Like Troy Daniels, Like Troy Daniels had some great moments, but guys, he's not an NBA starter. He's probably not, you know, a seventh or eighth man. Like he's are we down by 15? Let's give him a go. Are we up by 15? Let's give him a go.
I don't think David Fizdale really, you know, trusts him as a two-way player. You know, he has a very specific role that he has in mind for Troy Daniels to generate offense and to play in certain matchups, and that's pretty much it. I don't think he sees him as a complete, like, I'm going to play him at the two and that's the way it's going to be. He's very much a specialist in that sense. And that's where it comes down to, Keith, is that these guys have got to, you know, fill these roles, and you've only got so much time, and that's where the timeline, you know, becomes a little bit of an issue too, because, you know, the Grizzlies have spent so much time kind of, I don't know, trying to squeeze as much from this core as you can. And, you know, Dave Yeager and the love of veterans and all that stuff, there just is this gap where they didn't draft well and they didn't develop talent between the veterans and the rookies. And that gap is very large and very obvious. And it's particularly galling when you see the bites of the apple. You end up, one of those bites was Troy Williams that worked out really well. And, you know, you end up having to spit that bite out because you wanted to try to go get Tony Douglas, who, you know, who knows what Tony's going to be up to now. That's the frustrating thing, is even when you hit that bite of the apple, like Troy Williams or even James Ennis, you know, they end up dumping these guys, and, you know, by happenstance, they get Ennis back, not so much with Troy. So even then you're not batting 1,000 with the undrafted free agents that you have actually had success with early on.
Yeah, it's dark. And Troy Williams had a pretty good summer league. I think he averaged like 23 per game.
Yeah, he averaged very similar to Wayne Seldon, actually, in terms of all of his numbers were almost identical to Seldon, the shooting, the scoring percentages, fewer assists, but that's about, yeah, it's pretty much the same, almost the exact same line.
I will say Troy Williams, watching a few of those Rockets games, his was more volume based of just running up the court and chucking it, where I felt like Seldon was controlling the game a little more. So Troy Williams did turn into Wayne Seldon eventually. So I guess that works out, but what you say is correct. You know, like them cutting free guys for the short sighted moves, you know, hasn't been great. And yes, Ennis is back. And I have Ennis as my fourth best Grizzly.
Well, that's a boy going through the old best Grizzly. It's an interesting. They're gonna need some development, and they're gonna need Chandler Parsons to be really, really good, which is gonna be tricky. You mentioned Jermichael Green. I still think, based on this market, Keith, and everything that I continue to hear, that this may end up taking quite a while because of, you know. I don't know that Jermichael's agent is handling this especially well, and the market is clearly turned against restricted free agents, and to some extent against bigs, although he can do a lot of things that the modern big, you know, needs to be able to do. I would think that either this thing turns into a Grizzlies, you know, sign him to a $8-9 million a year kind of deal over 3-4 years, or he may end up taking this thing all the way to the deadline, the way that Tristan Thompson did with the Cavs and some others have done in the past, and may play for that qualifying offer. I don't know if that's a great idea based on next year's potential market either. I think the long and the short of it is that, you know, it's hard to envision a scenario where Jermichael Green isn't the starting power forward one way or the other. I just hope they can work it out without creating unnecessary friction within the team, because I think it's a little acrimonious at the moment.
Yeah, I think at the start of free agency, I was on board with, you know, 3-year, $24 million, $8 million a year, because I didn't think that market was going to be there. And now it seems like it has kind of turned against him. I'd be stunned if he did the Tristan Thompson holdout, because Tristan Thompson had all the leverage in the world. I think he has Rich Paul as an agent. He had LeBron James, you know, as a de facto agent. Jermichael Green has nothing in that, you know, on that front. So I assume he'll be back. If there's still like an $8 million a year contract, I assume he's going to take it. He's got to look at the other guys, like Nikola Mirotic doesn't have an offer. Jerebko signed for, I think, $6 million or $4 million. Ilyasova signed for $6 million. And these are guys who are, they're comparable. Yeah, like he's a few years younger than these guys, and he's played more minutes. Well,
he's much more of a two. I think he's much more of a two-way player. I mean, or certainly on the defensive end, he's much better than those guys. And offensively, I mean, his numbers are his advanced numbers are really good. His synergy numbers are really good. They're a lot. He's a guy that if you talk yourself into the fact that he was like a 13% usage guy, and if you say, well, we bump that up a little bit, if he can keep close to those same numbers, he could be a decent offensive player and a very good defensive player. It makes sense. But, I mean, you're sitting there with Nerlens Noel, who's just kind of, you know, I mean, he's a much more, highly touted guy. The situations that we've seen it throughout the league, and even going to what happened with Jonathan Simmons or Patrick Patterson, for that matter. I mean, two really low number deals. You know, for guys, and Patterson was not a restricted free agent, but Simmons was and was cut loose. You know, again, that just demonstrates where the market is right now. And I think it's unfortunate for Jermichael because, you know, it sucks for him. I think he was really dreaming of that, you know, 8-digit payday a year, but I don't think that's coming. And, you know, I don't know. His agent does not have any other high profile or even medium profile clients. So I think he might be a little overwhelmed by this, and he might have overplayed his hand a little.
Yeah, it's bad for Jermichael. Good for the Grizzlies in the long run. Hopefully, assuming that offer does come in, you know, in the single millions.
And I think probably at the end of the day, it will. So now Keith, last thing, after seeing Summer League, we've kind of discussed, and like, you know, I wish Vince Hunter could somehow parlay his Summer League incredible play into something of an NBA talent, because the guy plays hard and he's fun to watch, but I don't think that's going to happen. The rest of the Grizzlies are going to go on. They are going to play, and they are going to play in a very difficult conference. Do you have the Grizzlies in the playoffs at this moment? Who among the Western Conference teams is going to make way? Who among the playoff teams is going to make way for, I assume, the Timberwolves? You have them in the postseason. Most people seem to have the Nuggets sniffing around there. Who makes way? Is it the Grizzlies?
I do not currently have the Grizzlies in the postseason, and that's even assuming Jermichael Green comes back. I feel like the Oklahoma City thing was just such a negative blow to the Grizzlies, getting Paul George out of Victor Oladipo's salary dump was such a win. So, like, clearly, you know, the Thunder are up there. I think the Timberwolves jump them. Although after Jimmy Butler, I think they made lots of not good moves. I don't think Taj Gibson and Jamal Crawford are particularly helpful. I'm a believer in the Nuggets, that with Millsap and Jokic, they're going to jump the Grizzlies. I think the Jazz did a great job of hanging on once, even though they lost Gordon Hayward. So I think the Jazz are better than the Grizzlies. And so then it's like the Trailblazers. You know, they looked awesome with Nurkic down the stretch. So I trust the Trailblazers more than another year of the Grizzlies, mainly based on I don't trust the rest of the Grizzlies roster, and I don't trust Chandler Parsons. And then, unfortunately, like, we thought the Clippers were going to fall out when they lost Chris Paul, but they've honestly done a fine job as well. I think the Grizzlies and the Clippers are neck and neck fighting for that 8-9 seed. But so I have, you know, the Warriors, the Rockets, the Spurs, the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Wolves. That's six. And then I think the Jazz and the Blazers are better. That's 7 and 8. And then I have the Grizzlies and the Clippers kind of fighting for that nine spot. So I don't know. And that's assuming the Rondo Boogie reunion in New Orleans doesn't vault them high. So no, I'm in a dark space, Peter. If Mark and Mike can play 70 games again, and like last year was best case scenario in my mind for them.
They won
43 games. Man, I'm super nervous that they passed on getting helpful veterans this offseason. Some of those guys with playoff experience have gone to other teams. The Grizzlies swung for the fences on perennial lottery players, McLemore and Evans, you know, as like the life raft to keeping the Mark and Mike show going. They're trading out Tony Allen and Vince Carter and their wins above replacement for unnamed second round draft picks and, you know, guys who have negative value of replacement. So yeah, no, I'm at a dark spot. I got him around 10.
It's yeah, I think that's understandable. And so much of it hinges on the health of Chandler Parsons. I mean that's the clear ceiling floor decider right there. You know, that changes everything. If he's not healthy, if he can't do anything, then you know, there's a lot of trouble ahead with those minutes. And if he can do something, we'll see. But one thing we do know, Marc Gasol looks in great shape, based on his Instagram. Guy looks good, looks ripped. And his brother certainly looks a lot like Mike Conley. And Mark made light of that. It's weird. It's very strange to see Adria Gasol. I mean, if there was a white Mike Conley, that's him. It's bizarre.
That was one of the Instagram stories of the summer, was seeing Adria Gasol looking exactly like Mike Conley. And even more confusing, that guy's like 6'7". And he looked like a miniature Spanish Mike Conley.
It's weird. It's very strange. Mark's tweet was hilarious. He needs to ask his mom some questions because Mike's dad was over in Barcelona right at that time.
Yeah.
For the Olympics. So that was great. Keith, thank you. I know you've got to run. I appreciate you taking so much time and bringing all that firsthand knowledge and all of your alternately dark and light feelings on the Grizzlies. You are at times a little more positive than me and at times a little more negative than me. So I appreciate stabilizing one way or the other. Tell everybody where they can find you and your compadres and your content, because baby, it's all about slinging that tent around the old internet.
I sling my opinions and my podcast at Fast Break Break on Twitter. The podcast is called Fast Break Breakfast. It is available everywhere, also on thestepback.com. But any old podcast app, type in Fast Break Breakfast. That's Fast Break, one word. That's right, we're changing it.
Breakfast, also one word, by the way.
Breakfast, one word.
Break yep. Fast, even though you are breaking your fast in the morning.
That's
when
correct.
You eat. So no, but you've gone with one word on that. But Fast Break Breakfast is two words, though, correct?
Yeah, Fast Break is one word. We've fused together, despite it having that little red squiggly line under it every time we type it, mm-hmm. and then yes, breakfast, one word. Again, if you Google those words, you'll find it.
Even I would think, even if you Google them as one giant phrase without any spaces whatsoever,
yeah,
I would still think that you probably are likely to find Keith and the boys over there. Keith, many thanks. Enjoy yourself, and we'll chat again soon before the season starts.
Thanks, Peter. Really appreciate it.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.